Gentlemen, Happy New Year, good morning. Welcome to today's Good Information webcast. My name is Benjamin Chi. Presenting with me today is Dr. Chantal Lacasse with NERA. NERA is the auction manager for AEP Ohio's competitive bidding process. For today's webcast, we are focused on the March 2019 auction under the competitive bidding process. I will start here with one disclaimer. The entire process is for this competitive bidding process is a process that has been approved by the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, and there are governing documents that govern the process itself. The governing documents include the petition, the joint settlement, as well as the PUCO order under case number 16-1852-EL-SSO. Included in the set of documents that are governing this process will include some of these documents that were included in the proceeding that includes the bidding rules or the CBP rules, the standard contract known as the Master SSO Supply Agreement, the rules and protocols for participation by associated bidders, as well as the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. So any statements that we make on this call that describe or refer to the documents and the agreements are summaries only, and they are qualified in their entirety by reference to such governing documents. We have posted these documents on the website, the CBP website, and we have provided a link at the bottom of this slide for your reference. It is www.aepohiocbp.com. Again, CBP for the competitive bidding process. So the website itself is maintained by NERA. NERA is the main point of contact for bidders. If you have questions or are looking for information about the CBP, we ask that you direct all your questions to NERA. This will ensure that we will be able to follow the rules as approved by the PUCO and ensure that all bidders are treated fairly and their qualifications are evaluated equitably. We will administer the auction and we will be the point of contact that will present the results to the Commission. For today's webcast, we will talk about the auction process, provide you an overview of the entire process. We will then take a deep dive into the product design and go through the terms of the transaction by explaining the key elements of the contract. And then we will switch gears to talk about the practical aspect of the process by explaining to you what the process requirements are, but also where to find information on the CBP website. And we'll talk about what bidding in the auction means. A couple of housekeeping items here. First, take note that this presentation, as well as any Q&As that come from this session, will be posted to the CBP website after this presentation. And throughout this webcast, you may ask your questions. To ask your questions, please locate the Q&A on the right side of your screen. Select all panelists in the Ask box. Type in your question. If it relates to a particular slide, we ask that you include the relevant slide number as well, and then click Send to submit your question. We will respond to questions as we go along as practicable. As we see them coming in, if we can address them during the presentation, we will do so, but we will certainly pause at the end of the session to provide the responses if they have not been addressed already. All questions coming to us will be submitted through this WebEx platform, and we will provide the answers verbally. And again, all of the Q&As will then be aggregated into FAQs and posted online after this webcast. So this process, this competitive bidding process, is a multi-solicitation process that includes 12 full requirement options under case number 16-1852-ELSSO, and what we will call going forward in this presentation as ESP number 4. So we are into round four of a 12-part process. So here, the fourth option is what we will also call the March 2019 option. The bid date for this March 2019 option is on March 5th. And there is a laddering structure in place for this multi-solicitation process. The first two options conducted in November of 2017 and March of 2018 has procured 100% of the load, and in different terms for 1 year, 2 years, and 3 year term. And because of the laddering structures, what we're trying to do is to procure supply for an upcoming delivery year that will replace the contracts that are due to expire. So here, from the prior auction for round three in November of last year, as well as this auction, we're looking to procure 17% each in each auction of a 12-month term that starts June 1st of 2019 through May 31st of 2020. And again, this supply period and this contract term will replace the contracts procured in the first and the second auction that are due to expire on May 31st. So again, the supply period, and I'll repeat this again, for this upcoming auction is going to be for a 12-month term, and the delivery supply period is starting June 1st, 2019, and it will run through May 31st, 2020. The results of the prior auction from November of last year is posted here. The format is a descending clock auction, and the way that it will proceed is through a series of rounds. And in the prior auction, third auction, we have a total of 12 registered bidders. We concluded the auction, and the auction ended with 13 rounds in all. We started the auction with a price in between $60 to $80 per megawatt hour, and the clearing price landed at $46.16 per megawatt hour. We fully procured the 17 tranches that we needed, and that is for a one-year product. The PUCO accepted the results on November 7 of 2018. The product is a load following slice of system pool requirements product. What it means here is that it is both a pool requirements product as well as a load following product. So by the load following nature of this product, the load is divided into tranches, and a tranche is a fixed percentage of the load of SSO customers. And when you bid on a tranche, you're bidding on a percent of load, meaning that you're bidding to supply full requirement service for a percent of the load of SSO customers. SSO customers are those customers that take retail generation from AEP Ohio, and they exclude PIT customers. And to be clear, PIT customers supply will be procured under a PIT RFP after the conclusion of this SSO auction. So the event, the PIT RFP event, will start after this whole process for the March 2019 auction concludes. And more information about the PIP RFP will be provided on the website and announced at the later part of this process. This is for full physical delivery, and the P-Node ID is provided here for your reference. This is not a financial transaction. This is for physical delivery to the delivery point. P-Node ID 12693646700. You will be the LSE, the load serving entity, and you will assume that responsibility, including scheduling for SSO supply and making arrangement for the delivery of your SSO supply. The auction date is March 5th, and here we are after a one-year product starting June 1, 2019 through May 31st, 2020. We are looking at a product that is identical to the one that we have solicited in November of last year, a total of 17 tranches. There is a load cap in place of 80%, which means that you cannot bid more than 13 tranches. That's the maximum that anyone can bid under the maximum load cap of 80%. And each tranche is associated with 1% of SSO load. The auction format is a descending clock multiple round auction, and the auction itself will feature multiple tranches of a single term. And what we mean here is that we are more specifically looking for a total of 17 tranches that are being offered in this auction for a single term. The term is starting June 1, 2019 through May 31st, 2020. The auction will proceed in multiple rounds, and in each round, you don't tell us what you would like to be paid at, but instead, the auction manager will announce a going price, and you, the suppliers, will state how many tranches you want to supply at the going price that we announce. From one round to the next, if there are more bids that are offered than what is available or what is needed, then there is excess supply, and the auction will continue to the next round, and the price will tick down. And round by round, this will continue until there is no longer excess supply, and that is when the clock auction will end and the clearing price will be established. Because there are variants in the way clock auction works for this particular format, just to be very clear, there is not going to be a sealed bid round. You as the bidder will provide exit prices as you withdraw your tranches throughout the auction. At the end of the auction, when the auction reaches a point where there's no longer excess supply, the auction will establish what we call a single clearing price that will be applicable to all bidders. All bidders will receive that single clearing price. There are a couple of announcements that I have to make in the next couple of slides. The first is the minimum and maximum starting prices. The range of this starting price is going to be between $60 per megawatt hour, which is what we call the minimum starting price, and $80 per megawatt hour, which is what we call the maximum starting price. And the actual round one price itself will start somewhere in between this range, inclusive of $60 and $80 per megawatt hour. And that's where it will start, and round by round, the price will tick down after. So this is the first piece of information that we are announcing. The second is regarding the megawatt measure. At this time, the PLC that we're looking at is 2,553 megawatts with one tranche at 25 megawatts and 53 in decimal. So that's what we are looking at. The PLC itself is based on the five highest CP experience in PJM in the prior planning year for SSO customers only. This is for non-shopping customers. Suppliers, to take note that the amount of actual quantity being delivered depends on many factors, and we're providing this megawatt measure here for each tranche for information purposes only, but you are really obligated to provide not the megawatt measure, but you are obligated to provide supply for the percent of the load associated with your tranche. You must follow the load. This is a load-following product, and you're responsible for any migration or changes in demand. The other thing that I have to announce is that you will find this term in the Master SSO Supply Agreement known as the seasonal factors. At this time, under the contract, we are fixing the seasonal factors at 1. So what it means is that there will be no seasonal adjustment for your auction clearing price to what you're going to get paid. You're going to be paid based on the auction clearing price for each megawatt hour of supply delivered or supplied during the delivery term. a few key events. First is that the auction, as I've stated before, will start on March 5th. There's going to be a two-part application process. After this point, the part one process will start this coming Monday, January 14th. It will run through January 25th when the part one applications are due. The part two process will begin February 1st and it will run through February 14th, Valentine's Day, when the part two applications are due. There will be a point where you practice or be eligible to practice all aspects of the bidding process. There will be a trial auction that will be held. You'll be able to practice bidding through the software as well as the backup procedures. And this is scheduled to take place on February 27th. And this will be prior to the start of the auction on March 5th. A few announcements that will be made leading up to that point. After this point, if there are any updates to the seasonal factors or megawatt measure, we will inform you of that no later than February 1st. And the round one price, the actual price when the auction will start, will be announced one day after the trial auction on February 28th. In terms of the two-part application process, this slide here provides, again, the deadline. The window for part one will be from January 14th to January 25th, and the window for part two is Feb 1 to February 14th. This two-part process is mainly taking place online. There will be an application website that you will have to log in with the credentials that we provide to you. For those of you who are returning bidders, take note that the information will be sent to you shortly if you have not already received them. You will use those credentials to log in into the website to provide information to us. Everything is primarily done online, as I will explain. Through the Part 1 application process, you'll be providing to us basic contact information, company information, and there will be these documents known as inserts that you will download. You will complete them electronically, print them out in some cases, sign them, scan them, and then upload that back into the application portal. You'll be also allowed to upload any supporting financial documents, for example, through the application portal. That entire part one process, again, is done online. Part two process works similarly. Information that is required of you, including your indicative offer, which we will explain in the latter part of this presentation what it is, will be all entered through the online portal. There will be inserts for which you will be required to upload. It works in a similar way. You will have to download them, complete them, print them, sign them, scan them, and then upload that back into the portal. And that is what the part two process is about. Again, almost everything is done online. The only thing that is outside of the online application process is for you to provide your pre-bid letter of credit or your cash to support your bids. So that's the two-part process. The auction, again, will be held on March 5th. The auction results are contingent on the approval of the commission on the day the auction closes. The auction manager will submit a confidential report of the auction results to the commission. The commission will then have a two-day review window. If the commission does not act within this review window, then the auction results are deemed approved or accepted. At the time when the commission approves the results, they may also publicly release the auction clearing price and the names of the winning bidders from the auction. I make mention of these timelines for you because there is a strict requirement that once the results of the auction is approved, then the master SSO supply agreement, the standard contract, must be fully executed by both parties, and winning bidders must fulfill your credit requirements all within 3 days from the commission acceptance of the results. In terms of the details of the product that we are after, again, this is both a full requirements as well as a load following product. I'll talk about what it means to be a full requirements product first. So what we are after here is for you, the SSO supplier, to assume the responsibility of an LSE. You're expected to provide full requirement service that will include energy, capacity, ancillary services, as well as certain transmission service that are required of you. You're responsible for providing that full requirement service as described in the Master SSO Supply Agreement and to follow the load. This is for SSO customers only, those that are taking retail generation from AEP Ohio, but it will exclude PIP customers' load. You will bear all the costs associated as described in the contract for this responsibility. And importantly, appended to the Master SSO Supply Agreement is Attachment F, the sample PJM invoice that will allocate the responsibilities of both the SSO supplier as well as AEP Ohio as the EDC, the Electric Distribution Company, as the term or the abbreviation is used in Attachment F. I will end off this slide on the contract requirements here with a discussion on the credit requirements. There are two credit requirements under the contract, but I'll tell you how it works first, and then I'll talk about the two credit requirements. So how it works is that, in general, a credit assessment will be made on each supplier, and AEP Ohio, as the counterparty, will grant to each counterparty an unsecured credit line based on the tangible net worth as well as the credit rating of either the counterparty or your guarantor if you're relying on the credit worthiness of a guarantor. And any exposure above the unsecured credit line that is granted to you will then need to be met with cash or a letter of credit. If you're relying on the credit worthiness of a guarantor, then an executed guarantee that is acceptable to AEP Ohio must be in place first in order for the unsecured credit to be granted. In terms of the two requirements, again, there are two requirements envisaged under the Master SSO Supply Agreement, and there are two corresponding unsecured credit lines. So the first requirement is what we call an ICR or independent credit requirement. This is an amount that is required per tranche and that declines through the term of the Master SSO agreement. Corresponding to this requirement is the unsecured credit line known as the independent credit threshold. You can find all this described in the Master SSO agreement. The second requirement is known as a mark-to-market exposure requirement. And the corresponding unsecured credit line is what is known under the contract as a credit limit. The mark-to-market exposure basically calculates what the exposure is and take notes of the difference between the prevailing market price on a given valuation date and the market price in effect on the day the auction has closed. And it will take those differences and mark the entire contract to market, and any exposure, any mark-to-market exposure that is beyond the credit limit that is granted will then again needs to be met with a letter of credit or cash. The form of the guarantee as well as the form of the performance assurance letter of credit are provided as attachment under the Master SSO Supply Agreement. And with that, I will now turn the time over to Dr. Lacaz, who will lead us in this discussion regarding the practical aspects of this auction process. Dr. Lacaz?
Thank you, Mr. Chi. We've mentioned a couple of times now that the application process is basically done online. And in this section, we'll talk about the CBP website. So there's really two websites. One application website where you will be submitting materials for purposes of applying to participate in the auction. And then there's an informational website, and what I'm going to go through now is to provide the highlight of that informational website, aapohiocbp.com. So on the main page, you have on the left-hand side a navigation bar that allows you to go to various sections of the website. And on the right-hand side, you have a summary of key dates coming up, as well as recent announcements that we've made. So in the next few slides, I'll be going through a little bit more detail on particular tabs that you can get to using the left-hand navigation bar. So we'll start with the information tab. So on the information tab, you have a documents page, which is what is shown here, where you have all the governing, most of the governing documents for the CBP, including auction documents such as the CBP rule, the master SSO supply agreement, as well as credit documents. You have additional documents that are part of the process and that you may want to consult as well. A second tab is the data room, and in this data room, you will be included various data series that are updated on a monthly basis. So those data series, including hourly energy, monthly switching statistics, et cetera, are updated on or before the 20th of each month. This data room tab also has a description of all of the various data series that are provided on the website, along with notes on methodologies as appropriate. There were some changes to the data room that were effected during the time of the prior auction in November 2018. So this is just a reminder that starting with the September 2018 data update, the CSP and OPCO companies were aggregated in reporting hourly energy, customer counts, and switching statistics. And in the same vein, small commercial and industrial and large commercial industrial data were aggregated into a single commercial and industrial group, and data is now provided at that aggregate level. Data going forward will be provided in that level of aggregation, and for the convenience of bidders, AP Ohio has provided 5 years of historical data using these same categories. The website also includes a tab where you can ask us a question. So under the Contact Us tab, there is Ask a Question page where you can provide your questions. The questions go to the auction manager, and we use resources, including personnel from AEP Ohio, to assist us in responding to your questions and making sure they're accurate. The bidder questions are answered typically within 2 business days, so we'll provide a response to you via email, and then the question and the responses are posted as FAQs on the CBP website. Alternatively, you can also simply provide your question by email to us at aap-cbp@nera.com. So that concludes the quick overview of the CBP website. We invite you to visit the website, including the FAQs page, for the latest information. In this next section, I will be talking about the application process with particular emphasis on the specific requirements of the Part 1 and the Part 2 application. So we've been talking about the fact that it's an online process. So you will need login credentials to access the application website. If you are a returning bidder, then you will receive a reminder of your login credentials by email from the auction manager. If you have not participated before, then you will be registering for an application account. In other words, registering to obtain login credentials to be able to access the application website. And you can do that again through the Contact Us tab under the Register for an Application Account page, and you will be asked for basic information, including company name and contact information for one or two contacts. Alternatively, you can also provide that same information to us by email at aep-cbp@nira.com, providing company name, the full name of a contact, phone number, and email address. A couple of reminders regarding the application process. So first, for returning bidders, we will be providing you your login credential, reminding you of them. And also, there are portions of the Part 1 application which you do not have to provide again. So there are certain fields in the Part 1 form that will be pre-populated with the information that you provided previously. And also, some of the inserts will be pre-populated in that Part 1 form for returning bidders as well. So I mentioned inserts or standalone forms in Word format that you have to use in certain circumstances that you will be filling in certain circumstances, printing to be able to sign and then scan and upload back to the Part 1 form. Also of note, and I didn't note that when we were looking at the documents page of the information tab, but modifications that AEP Ohio has found acceptable in the past for credit documents have been compiled in a list and in specific documents that are available and are posted currently to the CBP website. I'll now be going through the requirements for the Part 1 and the Part 2 application. So the requirements for the Part 1 application are fairly simple. First is to provide contact information for the applicant. That includes contact information for an individual that we will call the representative. That individual represents the applicant in the application process and in the auction process more generally. The representative has specific responsibilities, including the representative is the individual who is designated to be able to provide confidential information to other authorized individuals of the applicant. There's also a requirement to provide information for a legal representative in Ohio. That's an individual, could be legal counsel, doesn't need to be, who agrees to accept service of process. It could also be a company. Finally, the applicant can provide contact information for additional individuals who are involved in the application process and in the auction on behalf of the applicant. Those individuals are called nominees, so that's optional. There could be a single representative, but there could also be nominees, and these nominees, if they are provided in the Part 1 application, are then included in electronic communications from the auction manager to the bidder. So in other words, in providing notices to you regarding your application, we will be providing those notices via email. And if you provide nominees, we will provide those notifications not just to the representatives, but to the nominees as well. There are also requirements, PJM requirements associated with the Part 1 application, namely the applicant can show that it is qualified as a market buyer and market seller in PJM, and that it's qualified as a load-serving entity. And there are specific documents that we require to be able to show those qualifications. It's not required that you are so qualified at the time of the application. If you are not, then you have to show that you have investigated what those requirements are and that you're able to certify that you can comply with those requirements by the time that the supply period starts. The Part 1 application also requires various certifications. For example, agreement to the terms of the Master SSO Supplier Agreement, which is the standard contract to which all bidders and suppliers are subject, to agree to the CBP rules that specify the rules for bidding in the auction, as well as the core application requirements. And finally, bidders also certify that they keep information related to the auction confidential. Applicants are also required to provide various financial information that includes annual and quarterly financial statements, as well as credit ratings. For applicants that are either foreign, so that are not incorporated or otherwise formed in the state of the United States, or applicants that are relying on a foreign guarantor, there is additional requirements that apply to such entities, and these entities provide additional information with the Part 1 application. Finally, and this is optional, but the Part 1 application provides an opportunity for all applicants to request modifications to pre-bid credit instruments. To do that, the applicant will submit a red line of the pre-bid credit instrument in Microsoft Word format via upload to the application website, and that document will be reviewed by AEP Ohio, and a determination will be made of whether such modifications are acceptable or not to AEP Ohio. Any modification that's accepted, meaning that is deemed acceptable by AEP Ohio for one bidder, is made available to all bidders on an optional basis, and a compilation of all such acceptable modifications are, as I said, posted on the CBP website. I mentioned that there were inserts that are standalone form in Microsoft Word format. So here is a list of all such inserts. That doesn't mean that all applicants must provide all of these inserts. There are some inserts that are required of all bidders, including the representative designation, the representative responsibilities that are labeled P1-1, P1-2, respectively, as well as the legal representative, where contact information and a signed statement from the representative are made, as well as certifications. For those inserts that I just mentioned, returning bidders, to the extent that information has not changed, do not need to resubmit those inserts. So, for example, the representative responsibilities is an insert for which the representative signs to acknowledge the responsibilities of the representative. To the extent that the representative has not changed from the prior auction, then this insert does not need to be submitted again. Now, that being said, the certifications insert P1-6 has to be provided anew in each auction. P1-3 is for the designation of nominees, so those other individuals that could be part of your bidding team and would receive communications from the auction manager, that's optional. That being said, if you do exercise that option, you have to provide that insert anew each time for each auction. The PGM requirements insert are for those applicants that are not yet qualified as market buyers, sellers, or as load-serving entities in PJM. And finally, if bidders are part of any type of bidding agreement, that must be disclosed in the Part 1 application using the bidding agreement insert. Once an applicant is successful in the Part 1 application, then that applicant becomes a qualified bidder and is invited to submit materials for the Part 2 application to be registered as a bidder in the auction. This slide has a summary of those requirements, including submitting an indicative offer, pre-bid security that will be proportional to that indicative offer, making a number of certifications, including those for compliance with the association and confidential information rules, and finally, foreign entities, so either foreign applicants or applicants that rely on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor, must provide executed additional documents, as such documents are required under the Master SSO Supply Agreement. So those additional documents are due with the Part 2 application. For the Part 2 application, there's no distinction between new and returning bidders. all requirements apply to all bidders equally. So first with the indicative offer, the indicative offer is the maximum number of tranches that a bidder is willing to bid at two separate prices, namely the minimum starting price, which was announced earlier in the presentation at $60 a megawatt hour, and the maximum starting price at $80 per megawatt hour. The indicative offer is important in two respects. So that's the indicative offer, so the number of tranches at the maximum starting price. It determines the amount of pre-bid security that's required with the Part 2 application. That's going to be $500,000 per tranche of the indicative offer. And it also determines the maximum number of tranches that a bidder can bid in the auction. More precisely, the maximum number of tranches that the bidder can bid in round one, which is the bidder's initial eligibility. And as we'll see, the number of tranches that can be bid in the auction can never increase from one round to the next, which means that the indicative offer at the maximum starting price does then also determine the maximum number of tranches that the bidder can bid at any point in the auction. There are rules regarding that indicative offer. The indicative offer cannot exceed the low cap, which we've talked about already. So with 17 tranches in the auction and 80% of the tranches available at the start of the auction being the low cap. The low cap is set as 13 tranches, so the indicative offer cannot exceed 13 tranches. Furthermore, it's possible that the indicative offer will be further constrained by the credit-based tranche cap, and that depends on the credit worthiness assessment of the bidder or the guarantor, and that credit worthiness assessment is conducted on the basis of the information that the bidder has provided with its Part 1 application, namely the financial statements and the credit rating provided in the Part 1 application. To the extent that the bidder or guarantor is rated BB or above, there are no additional constraints from a credit-based tranche cap, but if not, then the maximum number of tranches of the indicative offer and of any bid in the auction could be constrained at 10 or at 5, depending on the credit rating as provided in the chart on this slide. The additional Part 2 requirements we've already mentioned, the pre-bid security. Each qualified bidder must submit a letter credit or cash in an amount of $500,000 per tranche of its indicative offer at the maximum starting price. In certain circumstances, for certain terms of the supply period, there is additional pre-bid security that is required, but for this auction, where there's a single product of a 12-month period, there is no additional pre-bid security that is required. There's a number of certifications that a bidder must make in the Part 2 application, including agreeing that bids in the auction constitute a binding obligation that under the master SSO supply agreement, and including compliance with association and confidential information rules. So a qualified bidder will certify that it's not associated with another qualified bidder, and that it will keep the information related to the auction confidential. As I mentioned, there are requirements for foreign entities. A foreign bidder or a bidder that is relying on the credit worthiness of a foreign entity as guarantor must provide all of the executed additional documents that would be required under the master SSO agreement, including an opinion from foreign counsel that either the master SSO supply agreement or the guarantee is enforceable, and a sworn certificate of the corporate secretary. And these additional documents should incorporate any changes that were required by AEP Ohio if AEP Ohio reviewed drafts of those documents submitted with the Part 1 application. We talked about the inserts with the Part 1 application. With the Part 2 application, there are fewer here. There is an insert that contains the required certification that is required from all bidders. And to the extent that a bidder is submitting cash and not a pre-bid letter of credit, then the bidder must sign the cash certification insert to acknowledge the conditions under which that cash could be drawn. That concludes our overview of the application process. There is further information on the website with the illustrative part one and part two forms. There are also application processing documents that are provided to bidders with typical deadlines and additional practical aspects of the application. In this next section, we'll talk about bidding in the auction. We've mentioned that the auction format used is a descending clock auction that proceeds in a number of rounds. Each round has three phases: the bidding phase, the calculating phase, and the reporting phase. The bidding phase is the phase during which suppliers are going to submit their bids. The bidding phase is a fixed amount of time, and that amount of time and that schedule will be provided to bidders ahead of the auction. And a bid here is a quantity, not a price. So suppliers state how many tranches they want to supply at the going price of the round. For the first round, or round one price, the auction manager will inform registered bidders, so those bidders that were successful in the part two application process, the auction manager will inform those bidders of the round one price no later than 3 days before bidding starts. After bidding concludes, then there is a calculating phase during which the auction manager tabulates the results and in particular calculates the price for the next round to the extent that there's excess supply. The auction moves on to the next round and the price is reduced from the prior round. During the calculating phase, bidders can no longer bid, but bidders cannot yet see the results from the round. Results from the round become available to bidders once the reporting phase starts, and that information includes the range of excess supply and the going price for the next round. We note here that if there is insufficient supply to ensure competitive bidding, then the auction manager has the discretion to reduce the tranche target, and the tranche target for the upcoming auction is 17 tranches. The criteria that would lead to such a reduction are determined prior to the auction, but they are not announced to bidders. Once certain pre-specified criteria have been met that occur at some point in the auction, then the discretion to reduce the tranche target is eliminated. We'll talk about what bids are and the additional information that bidders may be required to provide to have a bid that is complete. So bid in round one is just what we've been discussing so far, namely it's just a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to supply at the price of the round, at the round one price. The bidder cannot bid more than its initial eligibility. Again, that is determined by the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. And bidders will not be able to increase the number of tranches that they bid throughout the auction. Once the round is over, or the bidding phase and the calculating phase are over and the reporting phase begins, then reports are available to the bidders. This is a example or sample of the kinds of information that's provided, namely the excess supply and the price for the next round. So the price for the next round here is $65.75. The excess supply, what is provided to bidders, is not an exact number. It's a range. And within that range is the exact amount of excess supply. And in addition to these two pieces of information that are provided in the same way to all bidders, each bidder individually sees the results of its own bid. But bidders have no information about other bidders' bids, their identities, or their eligibility. So one thing that is provided then is the price for the next round, and that price has been reduced by a certain amount called a decrement. And the amount by which the price is reduced is related to the amount of excess supply that is in the auction. The price ticks down if there's positive excess supply, and it is done according to a formula or table that determines exactly what that decrease in price will be. And such formula or table will be provided to bidders in the bidder user manual. And the bidder user manual are provided to bidders who are successful in the Part 2 application, namely registered bidders. In the bidder user manual, you will also be provided with all the possible ranges of excess supply that could be reported to bidders during the auction. Now, we said that the decrement is determined, or the reduction in price is determined according to a formula. That is true, although we should note that the auction manager has the discretion to override that formula and select another amount for the decrease in price. In round two and all subsequent rounds, the basic bid is the same, namely it's always going to be a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at the price that is provided for the round. However, given that prices will be reducing throughout the auction, a bidder, while it may leave its bid unchanged, could also reduce the number of tranches it bids. When a bidder reduces the number of tranches it bids, we say that it withdraws tranches from the auction. Also of note are constraints on the amount that can be bid, namely a bidder cannot bid more than its eligibility. In round two, its eligibility is the number of tranches bid in round one, and in round three, it's the number of its eligibility from the prior round minus any tranches that were withdrawn. So this is saying a little bit more formally what we've already said before, which is that a bidder can never increase the number of tranches that it bids during the auction. So if a bidder is withdrawing tranches, or reducing the number of tranches it's bidding from one round to the other, then a bidder is required to provide an exit price. So an exit price is the last and best offer for the tranches that they will no longer be bidding. In the example that you have here, the price in round one is $70 per megawatt hour, and the bidder is bidding three tranches in round one. In round two, when the price is reduced to $65.75, the bidder is willing to bid two tranches at that price. That means there's one tranche that it was willing to bid at $70 per megawatt hour, and that it's no longer willing to bid at $65.75 per megawatt hour. Therefore, there is one price between those two, at which is the last and best price that the bidder is willing to offer for that tranche. That is the exit price. The exit price has to be above the current going price, because the bidder has stated that it's not willing to bid that tranche at $65.75, but it could be up to the previous going price of $70 per megawatt hour. So the auction continues as long as there's positive excess supply, so as long as there are more tranches bid than there are available, or more tranches bid than the tranche target. When the auction closes, the auction determines a uniform price, and that uniform price is called the auction clearing price. There are two cases in terms of how the auction clearing price is determined. One is when the number of tranches bid is equal to the number of tranches available in the last round, then the auction clearing price is the going price from that final round. If there are fewer tranches bid than are available in the final round, then the auction clearing price is the lowest exit price at which the tranche target is filled. I'll provide an example of that on the next slide. So in this example, in round 11, which is the first row of the top table, at a price of $39.42, there were 19 tranches bid, which is the sum of the bids of bidder A, B, and C, for a target of 17, which means that there was an excess supply of two tranches. Therefore, the price was reduced in round 12 to $38.68, and at that new price, there were only 14 tranches bid for a target of 17 tranches, which means that at this point, there are fewer tranches bid than there are available. from 19 tranches, total number of tranches bid of 19 to 14, there were 5 tranches that were withdrawn, 2 by bidder A, 1 by bidder B, and 2 by bidder C. That's in the second table. And each of those bidders provided an exit price for bidder A, $38.69, bidder B, $38.99, and bidder C, $39.42. To fill the tranche target, we basically filled a tranche target in price order. So there are 14 tranches that are bid at the going price of $38.68. So those are selected first. Next, we take the lowest exit price, which is $38.69. That provides 2 more tranches for a total of 16. So we need 1 more tranche to fill the tranche target, which will be at $38.99. And that fills the tranche target. The lowest price at which the tranche target is filled is $38.99, and that becomes the auction clearing price. So all suppliers are provided or would be paid at the same price, $38.99, in this example. That concludes our overview of the bidding rules. And in this slide, we're going to talk a little bit more about the practicalities of bidding, the actual bidding procedures. The main bidding procedure is to submit bids online using the auction software. And the trial auction, which is scheduled for February 27, 2019, will be each bidder's opportunity to practice the bidding procedure through the auction software. If there are difficulties with the auction software, there is a backup procedure. That backup procedure is by phone. And that means that the bidder will phone the auction manager's office, talk to a technical assistant, and the technical assistant will enter the bidder's bid in the auction software on the bidder's behalf. So everything goes through the auction software. It's just a question of whether you're able to submit that bid through the auction software yourself, or whether you will be relying on the assistant or the help of a technical assistant to do so. During a bidding phase, you can submit a bid, and if you change your mind, you can change your bid as long as the bidding phase is still open. The bid that counts is the last bid submitted and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. That's true whether it's you submitting the bid or whether it's a technical assistant submitting a backup bid. So a backup bid will count when it's entered and verified by the technical assistant in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. It's not when it's called in. It's your responsibility to get your bids in on time on a round-to-round basis. As we mentioned, we provide a schedule ahead of time, and the trial auction is one of the opportunities that you have to ascertain that the systems that you have in place will minimize chances that technical difficulties would impair your ability to bid in the auction. During the trial auction, you will be invited to submit a backup bid so that you may, in particular, time the amount of time that you may need if you need to resort to the backup bidding procedure. If you are providing a backup bid, it is your responsibility to provide a bid that's consistent with the CBP rules and therefore that can be entered and processed by the technical assistant. The requirements to use the auction software are really minimal. You simply need a standard PC running Windows Vista, Windows 7 or later, or macOS 10.7 or later. Of course, you will need an internet connection, and we assume that you will have a primary access through a company's network. You could have a secondary access, a wireless card, or another way of accessing the internet, and you will need a web browser that is supported by the auction software, that is Internet Explorer 11 or later, as well as the most recent versions of Firefox, Safari, or Google Chrome. Finally, reminding you that if you need to contact us, you can contact us by email at aep-cbp@nira.com. For delivery of the pre-bid letter of credit, if you choose a pre-bid letter of credit to provide your pre-bid security, with the Part 2 application, then the address for delivery is provided on this page. To submit questions, as a reminder, if you want to submit questions to the presenter, please locate the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen and select all panelists in the Send To box. Then type in your questions. If you have a specific slide reference, please include that and click Send to submit your question. That concludes the presentation portion of this webcast.